Welcome back to the Munich Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel. With me tonight is J.R. Peters.
What up, what up, what up?
Here at the Munich Movie Club, we're a group of friends who select three movies more or less around a theme every month, and we put reviews of those movies on our website, munichmovie.club, and then once everything's been reviewed, we get together on our podcast to discuss those three movies. This last month, we've had a Miyazaki trio or a Studio Ghibli trio on our back burner for a while, and we figured what better time to finally do it than in a period when we're anxiously awaiting the U.S. premiere of Miyazaki's probable final film. He kind of has been teasing that for probably going on 15 years, if not longer, The Boy and the Heron, which is, I believe, premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival in September. Miyazaki's, you know, he's one of the greats. He's one of the true great cinematic artists, and his work in Studio Ghibli has long been freely available, not freely, but readily available on HBO or on HBO / Max / whatever the fuck. And we picked three of his movies for this last trio. We picked Porco Rosso, we picked Spirited Away, and we picked Kiki's Delivery Service. JR, where are you at on Studio Ghibli?
Where am I at? I think fucking awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
I would
say I've seen most of them. I had not seen, of the three we've watched, Porco Rosso, which surprisingly, I had not seen it, and I didn't, you know, like I wasn't really like looking for it or anything like that, but the pitch for it I read, I was not expecting to like this as much as I did. I really like this. It's pretty just straightforward movie. And I thought it was great. Everything that did about it, there wasn't like, you know, there's lots of other movies, you know, like Spirited Away and Kiki's Delivery Service have all these like multiple themes in them and stuff. They're like, this is just like an old fashioned, like feels like a callback to like Casablanca type shit, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great. I'd say A minus, probably just straight up A though.
Wow. Backing up a tiny little bit, like broader Studio Ghibli, like the whole thing. Have you seen like the heavy hitters? Your Totoro's and your Spirited Away's, obviously. But then like getting deeper into like his creative partner, Miyazaki's creative partner, Isao Takahata, like some of his movies, My Neighbors, the Yamadas, and like The Cat Returns, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've seen The Cat Returns, like obviously Ponyo, because that's a Miyazaki. And I'm looking at them here, and I would say the ones I haven't seen Earwig and the Witch, because
I will not be seeing that ever, I don't think.
It's got terrible reviews, but also the animation is not my style. But other than that, I would say the ones I haven't seen are From Up on Poppy Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen when Marnie was there, but I know I need to see that.
That one's great. I love that one.
Yeah, and I have not seen Ocean Waves.
I think I've seen that. Maybe. I can't remember. I've seen all of the Miyazakis now. Well, no, that's not. I haven't seen Castle in the Sky. I've seen all the other ones. I've seen about half of the Takahatas, and like the really deep cuts, like Cat Returns and whatever comes before Cat Returns. I haven't seen. But pretty much I've seen all the major ones, and like these are consistently fantastic movies, animated or no. These are the only animated movies that made it on to the most recent version of the Sight and Sound list. Both Spirited Away and Totoro were in the Critics 100, and then Grave of the Fireflies made it into the top 250. And that's it for animated movies. You have to, some hero did what we talked about in the Sight and Sound podcast that we did. Like they went through all of the ballots and put every movie that got any mentions at all onto like a numbered list on Letterboxd. And it's like 3,800 movies, give or take. A hero. A hero did that.
Yeah, send that to me. Find that list. Send it to me.
Because, like, again, like, the way they calculate the top 250, it's very... It's a huge amount of data, but once you get all the data, it's all very straightforward. It's just like, 300.
This one got the most votes.
Exactly. Yeah. But critically acclaimed, hugely successful films that are meticulously hand-drawn as time went by, some bit of computer animation mixed in, but primarily hand-drawn by Miyazaki himself, by Takahata himself, and their team of animators over in Japan. And I hadn't seen Porco Rosso or Kiki's Delivery Service before this latest trio. And to jump into Porco Rosso, JR, you gave your initial thoughts on that. I had in my head that this was going to be minor Miyazaki, because stills from it, images from it, have trickled through, I feel like, the least. I wouldn't necessarily put Kiki's high on that list necessarily either, but I would definitely put Porco at the very end, or near the bottom.
The very end of what?
Of like cultural penetration, cultural cachet, cultural influence. You don't necessarily like if you like read articles about the Ghibli Museum or the various or Ghibli Land that they have in Japan. It doesn't really talk about the Porco Rosso side of it, because I think both of those are more geared towards not for children, because I don't think any of these movies are explicitly for children. Like, my favorite Ghibli movie is Totoro, and that one is about like a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. But the movies that are most about children, I think, is what those exhibits are geared towards. And therefore, what Studio Ghibli itself perhaps feels is most important. It's not that Porco Rosso isn't tied in with things that Miyazaki cares about, namely planes and flying. Pretty much all of his movies feature flying in some way or another. And he's long been interested in planes and aeronautical engineering and all that stuff. He is an outspoken pacifist, and you can certainly read that into Porco Rosso. But in watching this, my thoughts were pretty much confirmed. I liked this movie well enough because of just the inherent charm of this animation style and Miyazaki's just total inability to not put a couple of like transcendent things into his movie. But compared to like the other two movies we're going to talk about, Spirited Away and Kiki's, I don't think this movie had anything on its mind. I really like those throwback movies that you talked about, which I 100% agree. Like, this is clearly an homage to like the movies that Porco might have gone to see in the theater or shortly thereafter. And I don't care for those movies. So an homage to it isn't going to move the needle for me either.
I totally understand where you're coming from with that. I get it and everything. I really like this movie because I like the idea of there being movies that are just like, this is what it is. Like, you're just here. And I liked this one, right? So I love, as we've heard in these, everybody that's listening to these podcasts from us.
Hundreds and hundreds.
The 100 million people that are listening to this a week or monthly.
Around the world, we greet you, Uzbekistan listeners.
Yeah, to our listeners in Papua New Guinea, as you know, I also like movies that are like very deep and what you know they have all these different themes or whatever. But just like, if you're just gonna make a movie, and you're like, this is just what it is, like. It's just a pig that doesn't like fighting for fascists, and we got some old Hollywood shit in here, and that's what it is. Do it. Actually do it. And if you pull it off, then I'm like, okay, I'm in. I like this shit. And he did that, right? And I think him pulling that off, I gave it an A, because I did not know that it was not going to, having seen a lot of these Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki films, like I said, they've all got some kind of thing, you know, they've all got kids in them. So there's all, every one of them has something about some kind of growing up or getting to know yourself or whatever. But this one's just like, this is what it is. And I did not know that going in. And after watching it, I was like, okay. You know, yeah. While I was watching it, I was like, I did, you know, you're kind of missing, you feel like you're like waiting for that to happen because it's a Miyazaki film and you know, that's what he's doing. But when you get to, for me, when I got to the end and I was like, oh, this is just a straight up movie. Like, cool. Like he did this, he did his thing. I enjoyed every bit of it. I was just, you know, like just because I had the expectation of something doesn't mean I should downgrade the movie because of that. It was it went in and did what it wanted to do and it did it well. I was entertained. I enjoyed, you know, these little throwbacks to them meeting in the fucking garden, like fucking that song I Am 16 going on 17, like
yeah, fucking yeah.
Sound of Music. They were just literally in the same, it looked exactly the same almost, you know, type of shit. I was just like, okay, this is cool. Like this is just a straight up homage to these 50s and 60s and 40s movies or whatever. And I thought it was great. And then just watching the dudes like be cartoonish at the end, semi-cartoonish fighting each other was also great. I don't remember the other guy's name, but Porco. And I also want to say one last, and this isn't the one last thing. I'm sure you're going to say stuff and we'll talk. Mm. But my final on this was, I love the fact that they just kept pointing out that this dude was a pig. And they were like, they were just like, you're a pig, bro. They're going to just put you in prison. They were like, they're not even going to give you a trial. You're a pig, you know, because you got like normally in a movie, they just treat these pig humans and dog humans and shit like they're just humans or whatever. But they just tell this dude like, you're a pig, bro. They're just putting you in jail. You're not even getting a trial. And I kept finding that funny.
It definitely is an outlier for Miyazaki. Porco is easily the oldest protagonist that has ever been in one of his movies. Like he's really the only other one that's like a full adult. Howl's Moving Castle, the lead of that is like early 20s probably. And then The Wind Rises is like non-magical, like historical drama for the most part. That movie has the most in common with this one, certainly, just because it's about like an actual pilot or an actual person who is just as into planes as Miyazaki is. But I do think I'm letting my expectations kind of color how I reacted to Porco Rosso, because I like, if not love, Miyazaki's like approach to all these various different stages of childhood and adolescence and all that stuff. I think that's what he's often the best at. I just don't see exactly what I just didn't get anything from Porco. It left me just totally cold. And like, it's not that I'm opposed to like Miyazaki hangout vibes either, because like my favorite movie of his is Totoro, which is a total hangout movie. Nothing happens in Totoro.
Yeah, that's fair.
There are zero stakes in Totoro. There are very little stakes in like Kiki's, but here the stakes are quite serious. The stakes are like, yeah, potential imprisonment by fascists or being shot out of the air. Like people's lives are at stake. And it retains a very playful tone, despite it being about like this interwar period in Italy when things are getting pretty bad. But it remains like an oddly pleasant movie that ends pleasantly and heavily implies that everybody gets a happy ending. I the big takeaway line that I did know from the movie going in was that I'd rather be a pig than a fascist, which is like the, you see that like meme every so often. And that's not what the movie's about at all, I don't think. I thought that, again, expectations, but I thought this movie was going to be what it was going to be about him evading the fascists. But they're just in the background. They're gaining power. They're solidifying their power. But the movie's not about Porco against the fascists or anything like that.
It's just, yeah, it's got like a couple statements in it, but it's not about those. Like, if it was about being against the fascists, you'd have firefights against the fascists. He's just, it's a Miyazaki plane film.
Yeah, Plain. Yeah, it's not like there's not great stuff in here. The vision that Porco has during his like near-death experience in World War I, great stuff. What you go to Ghibli movies to expect. Like, you go for those, for moments just like that. But that moment turns Porco into this, like, again, 30s, 40s protagonist. Strong, silent type, no nonsense, secretly a heart of gold under like his tough exterior. Like, that's just a trope. It's not new to anything Ghibli's doing. And that applies to a lot of the characters too. Like the American movie star who has no depth to him, or the person who would like to be a movie star. He's like proto Ronald Reagan and all that. Like the girl that Porco like folds into his service to like repair his plane. She's like a different version of this movie, especially from Ghibli, who frequently has like girl protagonists. Like, the movie could be about her, but because it's not about her, she's just reduced to like a spunky, can-do, Pippi Longstocking type. And then, like you mentioned, the woman in the hotel pining after Porco. Like, she's literally a woman who is putting her life on hold to stand in a garden and look at the sky and wait for the right man to show up. Like, these are tropes. These are things that are done in worse movies from worse studios that have no ideas. And Ghibli has a lot of ideas, and I just couldn't find any of that here.
So this is his fifth movie, right? So
that seems right.
It's we go Nausicaä, Castle in the Sky, My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, which isn't technically, yeah, that's not him. Kiki's Delivery Service, then Only Yesterday, another Takahata, and then Porco Rosso. So this dude's just, he's pumped out 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, movies in 5 years, 6 years,
mm-hmm.
where he's had his ideas, he's put his ideas into him. He's like, I just want to make a movie that's about people doing their thing or whatever.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm just like thinking.
And like, there might be something to that. Like, he takes a big break between this and the next movie is Mononoke, which comes out in 97, I think. Yes. And then another big break between that and Spirited Away.
Yeah, so he goes 5 years and then 5 years.
This does come at the end of a really, of a probably quite intense period of work for him. And I don't know, like, he's quite old now, so he would have been in like his 50s then, so not a young man by any means, even at his like period of highest productivity.
Oh man, when he made his, yeah, he would have been 50, about 50. He's 82 right now.
Yeah. So, yeah, there might be something to that. Like, he was in, like, a period of, like, artistic exhaustion, perhaps. I would absolutely chalk that up if we agree that this movie is just kind of, like, thematically vacant, which I think it is.
I think it is.
It's about how war is bad and war is pointless. And, I mean, there's never been a more pointless war than World War I. So, okay, great. And, like, that all fits into his pacifism. But just, like, if you want to explore that, you kind of go to Mononoke, you go to Howl's Moving Castle, You definitely go to The Wind Rises. Those all come later. I kind of don't remember anything at all of Nausicaa. I want to say that's in there too, though,
I
because
think
that movie is
so.
like that.
That's one of those movies where I haven't seen this and I haven't seen Nausicaa in a long time, so I don't want to say whether what themes it has in it and just sound like a fucking idiot. But
It's all like post-apocalyptic, so
yeah.
it wouldn't surprise me at all if there's something about just the general futility of conflict and all that.
Yeah, taking place in a post-nuclear futuristic world. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, here it's just it's very thin here, and the way the movie ends with like this like fist fight with all the pirates cheering them on. I don't know, like it's fun in the way that like the best Popeye cartoon is fun from
Yes.
whenever those are being animated, but
And I love those.
just
So,
thin as fuck.
yeah, I mean this is just us being totally different people. I fucking love those old Popeye movies, shows and stuff. Like I when I like even in high school, I would be like, my parents would be like, "What do you want for Christmas?" I'd be like, "You know, they still have those like Popeye DVDs where there's just like a bunch of Popeye things on, you know, compilations." I'm like, I'd be down for that.
Whenever I used to get taken to Fantastic Sam's as a kid, the branch would always play like fucking Claire the Cow or some shit like that. Like really old cartoons. And that was really like the only place I ever saw them. And that was very much what I was reminded, like that pretty clearly is the model for like the Air Pirates here, which again is just like he's reaching all the way back to worse stuff and putting it into his movie. You know what else I think puts this outside of general of like the vast majority of Ghibli stuff is like it's not that all of those movies are set in Japan, but they're all inflected with like a Japanese sentiment. Like Kiki's Delivery Service, for all intents and purposes, takes place in like Sweden. Howl's Moving Castle is like in the Alps. But those are clearly coming from a Japanese sensibility. I didn't really get that at all here. Am I wrong about that? What did you detect any like any Japan, any sense of place in Porco Rosso?
No.
Yeah, again. I just feel like anybody could have made this. Disappointing for me. I mean, I just listened to the Blank Check guys talk about Porco Rosso this last week, and like they raved. They loved it. It was an older episode, but this was one of their favorites when they were going through like all of Miyazaki's movies, and that I could not be
Okay.
convinced of that. That
I
doesn't
can't
make
be
that's not an
convinced
opinion that
of
makes
that
sense to
either.
me.
The pro
Do it again.
like that's where I'm like, it's an A minus, but the problem is you're like watching Miyazaki films, you're just like A plus, you know, or whatever. So it's like, for me, it's definitely not a, like, I could easily name five that I'd liked more than this,
I
you
could
know.
not name five that I liked less than this. This might be my least favorite.
Wow.
I think I could confidently say that it's my least favorite.
Wow.
I didn't really like Nausicaa, but I think that had enough ideas in it. And enough like scope and breadth to put it above Porco. I think this was
Okay.
my least favorite. And that'll be the last negative thing I say about a Miyazaki movie for the rest of the podcast. Because our next movie is Spirited Away, his 2002 movie that won the best animated Oscar. I think still one of the only foreign movies to ever have won that specific award. This movie was given 6 out of 5 stars by some major critic at the time of release. Incredible, wildly overheated, not wildly overheated, but just like as For as much praise as a movie can get, this movie received it. It is the highest animated film on the Sight and Sound list. It is a universally recognized masterpiece. And we generally agree with that, don't we, JR?
This movie is a B minus.
Yikes.
No, I'm joking.
Are you serious?
No. Not at all. I mean, okay. this movie gets a fucking A just off of the food in the movie. Like, if you, maybe an A plus, it might get an A and not an A plus just because it was made in, when was this movie made? 1989, you know, like, if you get it. What? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
2001.
Yeah. Kiki's Delivery Service was like 1989 or whatever. But yeah. If this is like, if this movie's made in 2003 and you got like a little bit of CGI in there with the help, then it's like this whole movie is an A plus just off the food alone, for sure. I think I said this when Turning Red came out, there was one scene where the dad was making bow and it was fucking glorious. And I'm pretty sure I may have said it to you, but I know I said it out loud. I was like, I really want him to remake Spirited Away and Ratatouille now. Like, after seeing the food in that movie, I was like, let's get these two movies about food fucking remade in 9K or whatever they're doing these days.
I mean, I don't know if I would co-sign on to that recommendation, because you're not going to improve on either of those movies. Both of the, well, like, I bumped on this latest viewing Spirited Away from my top 100 into my top 50. This is it's a stone cold masterpiece. I lamented how little I thought there was to Porco Rosso. There's almost too much in Spirited Away, but it all more or less coheres to a couple central themes, and that makes it the kind of movie where you can watch it for the 10th time and pick something new out of it, or something is just going to click the 10th time you watch it, and then it just like opens up a new way to think about it, a new way into it. It's just a bottomless wealth of visuals and theme and character and acting and writing, and it's a stone cold masterpiece. It's deserving of that 6-star. This is like I'd have to watch Totoro again, I think, to like determine which is my favorite Miyazaki, but it's close. It's very close.
I mean, it's going to be this one. Like, it's the universal selection, not because everyone's like red-pilled themselves or whatever these people say these days. It's because it's fucking the best one.
This is probably the objective choice, but Totoro might, in my case, be the subjective choice.
Why?
I see. I'd have to watch Totoro. I just think Totoro is just.
I mean, I'm not hating on you. You're just like, I love this movie. Yeah.
It's the difference between a very broad approach to. It's the difference between packing everything, every thought you've ever had into a movie. And in Totoro, it's one thought communicated in the most perfect and clear way that a person ever could. And just like those, and that's the difference between those two movies. It's Hangout versus plot. It's vibes versus theme. It's two different flavors, but each equally delicious. It's a pig stomach versus an onigiri. As far as Spirited Away foods are concerned. I don't know exactly which is which. I guess the pig stomach is spirited away.
That's what I was assuming.
Yeah, because it's a bag that holds things.
You can stuff whatever you want in there versus like an onigiri has to be folded three times to be perfect or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's like a couple of ingredients at most. It's okay. Yeah. That's a solid metaphor. I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, I like it. I will definitely say that I think this is the better film, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is, it's over 2 hours, and something that I picked up on this last view is how a lot of the characters like keep changing forms, and it's just offering new information about who these characters are. Like you see the different versions of No Face and Haku, and the baby changes a couple of times. It keeps everything within the one location, but it makes everything a little bit newer, a little different every time you keep coming back into these rooms. And like the place itself is humongous, and there's a new duck with a lily pad hat around every corner. Just more joy to be had all over the place. But like it's the central cast, they don't stay as they are, like physically and like emotionally. And that just like keeps everything moving, keeps everything fresh, holds your attention. You're just so with this movie from start to finish.
Got dragons. A dude that's a dragon.
Who is also a river.
Yeah. Who is also a river that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Like, every time I've seen this movie, I've seen this movie probably 4 or 5 times. It's very dense, despite being this like very brightly colored animated movie that you could take, you know, like a 5-year-old to. And it's hard when you have that big Haku realization where Chihiro is like riding on his back and she remembers that he's a river. the mechanics of the movie are working on you so effectively that it always breaks me up a little bit, even though
this is out of fucking left field.
Yeah. Yes. He's a river.
You're like, what?
But both characters treat it as such an incredible breakthrough that you totally buy the mythology. It all makes perfect sense. Of course he's a river. He was a river all along. He could never have been anything else. And then, like, as you know that's coming on repeat viewings, you're more in tune with, like, the rhythms of the movie. The reaction to it doesn't change. Like, you're still just as broken up as the first time. But the first time again, like, you barely understand what's happening. And it somehow is still able to, like, pull this reaction out of you. It's miraculous. It's incredible. Like I said, I haven't seen this movie a huge amount of times, and I never seen it with like a kid. So I do wonder if how that would play exactly. I'm sure it would work fantastically, but like the movie is also like quite episodic. So I think it would have no problem like holding a kid's attention as it's building to this, to these big giant realizations. So I don't know. Have you seen Spirited Away with a kid before?
No. No.
Okay. And like you never showed it to a nephew or a niece or anything.
So my niece is 10 and my nephew is 7. So I've never.
That's the time.
Yeah. I mean, I can, but I've never, like before now, I've never thought about it. You know, like before this, I was just like, oh, let's throw on some, like all the Disney movies I want to watch. You know, I'm like, have you guys seen Ratatouille? You know, I walk in, I'm like, who's trying to watch WALL-E or whatever? Because, you know, they're a little easier to convince a 8-year-old to watch, then I'm like, hey, you know, like versus Spirited Away or Kiki's Delivery Service, because they just hear, oh, this is Disney or this is Pixar or whatever, versus I'm like, hey, this is just an animated movie. Like, it's awesome, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie, I mean, they would, they'd have to enjoy it because it's just fun.
Like, yeah. It's, no it's, face is hilarious once he yeah. gets his mouth. And
he's just shoveling food down. You got the little soot spirits that are just bopping yep. around, throwing around soot into the thing and all acting like they can't carry it after she after she helps the one soot spirit, soot sprite, sorry. So it what makes this movie good is that it is very fun to watch, like you were saying. It's you're mm-hmm. just you're all in, something's happening. I mean, when the I don't remember what it was. They thought it was like a dirty spirit or whatever, and then it ended up being like an ocean spirit, maybe.
I think it's another river spirit.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was a river. So it's another river spirit. You just get like fun little scenes where the lady went to go get them food. And when the dirty spirit walks by, it all just like turns brown. And she's just like, damn, my food. It's like a quick, like 30, you know, less than 30 seconds, but you get a laugh out of it, a little laugh. And then it's like back to the story. And it's just, it feels like you get that like throughout, where it's just like little fun stuff thrown in while you're watching. Like her falling in, like right after that, she puts in the thing and the water starts and then she falls in and you're like, oh, she's going to drown in here. But then the spirit helps her out and is like, it's like, help me out, yo, points her to it. And they're all just pulling and pulling and pulling and it just keeps coming out and you're like, how much shit is in this dude? And it's just things like that are happening in the whole movie. You're just in for everything that's happening.
Yeah, and like that problem solving nature of it is like extremely satisfying. Not only in like the outsider little kid dynamic of her solving problems and like gaining confidence as the movie is going on, but a lot of these solutions are like quite practical. Like she's got like a Ipecac syrup pill that she keeps giving to people to make them throw up and solve their problems. It's all fairly knowable within like, or recognizable when like within a magical world. So it seems. I know that like my nephew, like my, I've given like a copy of this Blu-ray to my nephews, like gifted it to them and they've watched it. And I know that Shane's kid, I did the same with Shane's kids and they've watched it too. And that they like brought it up in conversation. I don't know that it's like living deep within their brains or anything like that, but I think it'd be a fucking blast to watch with kids just because it's a fucking blast generally. So again, Porco Rosso barely about anything. This might be the most Japanese movie that Miyazaki made. I don't know, probably Mononoke is probably more so, but this movie is Japanese as fuck. It's like a really clear representation of what I understand about Shintoism and like the idea that there are spirits that live in everything. And his repeated theme of like environmentalism, overconsumption, like a Buddhist idea of not wanting too many things. A lot of the movie's like perspective on work is interesting in the way that it has a lot of respect for work. It has a lot of respect for like these girls that are Chihiro's age doing the monk thing where you're like putting a wet rag on like a wood floor and like running all the way down in a very like efficient way. But at the same time, like if you work here, you're going to forget who you are. You're going to forget your name. Your name belongs to the owner. So it has like it has a lot of respect for work, but it doesn't necessarily think it's like the most important thing necessarily.
It's and it's also got respect for work, but not for the boss.
Sure,
you could think of it right. Like it's like you're out here doing your thing, but you got these soul like this lady. All this lady has to do is give this person a job. That's all she's asking for. But she's like, no, I need your name, and I can't even. I'm going to call you a completely different name because your name belongs to me now. And it's like, what are you even getting out of that? Is, you know, you're kind of looking at it, it's like, outside of just being a bitch here.
And I'm sure there's some kind of like a deeper calligraphy meaning to the way that she pulls Chihiro's name off of the page and he leaves one character. I don't have any idea how to read Japanese. I don't even know. I just don't know anything about like the alphabet, if you would even call it that. I don't think you would. But
it'd be kanji, right?
I got nothing. But just like turning those symbols into different symbols, I'm sure means something other than just the word Chihiro or the word Sen, which is like the name that Yubaba turns Chihiro into. Don't necessarily need it. It doesn't affect the movie in any. I don't feel like I'm missing anything by not understanding what's going on with like the specific writing of her name, but it's just another detail that I generally love in movies that come from other places. Like this movie, it can be appreciated by anyone, but it's for really Japanese people. And I generally love that kind of thing. Like I'm in like a restaurant stage. Like if I go to quote unquote foreign restaurant, I want to be treated badly there. That's kind of my standard. I want bad service. I want surly waiters and waitresses.
You want them to be like this white dude.
Yeah, fuck him. Until maybe I've gone there enough and they start to warm up to me. That's the goal. Like fake cheerfulness that you would get in like a Buffalo Wild Wings. I don't want that. I want surly waiters or surly servers who I have to earn the respect from.
Okay.
Anyways. Back to Spirited Away. The review that I posted on MunichMovie.club, I reposted that from several years ago. And the key thing that I pulled out for that review was like this very early shot that is not in Porco Rosso, but it's the kind of, and there's one in Kiki's Delivery Service too, like the foundational shot of this movie that you can frequently pull out of Miyazaki. Just like, we're spending a lot of time on this image, this like tableau, and we're doing it for a reason. And in Spirited Away, I think it's a very early shot when Chihiro is still with her parents and they're walking down the tunnel and she's like clinging to her mom as her dad is leading the way. And the shot is from Chihiro's perspective, looking up at her very confident, broad-shouldered dad, like striding forward. And I kind of wrote the whole review about that one shot, because it's about like having this person in front of you, losing that person, and trying to figure out to walk the way that he does. It's not necessarily that Chihiro ever like mimics his walk over the course of the movie, but just this very, like, if you strip away all the Shinto, all the Buddhist stuff, all the environmentalist stuff, there's just this very, very satisfying arc of this young girl who's, like, in the real world is in the process of moving from a place where she knows people to a place where she doesn't know people and is extremely nervous about that. And just seeing this girl go from no confidence to confidence and, like, saving her parents, even though by the end of the movie, it's kind of doing that thing where like, oh my gosh, was it all a dream? And I don't really give a shit about that. I don't think you can chalk that up to the magic of the movie, or you can just chalk it up. You can chalk it, you can do whatever you want with it. But Chihiro going from fearfulness to confidence, that's like the distilled nugget. If that's the distilled nugget of the movie, like, you're just never going to pull it off any better than you do here. Being terrified to walk down what appears to be like a structured wooden ladder outside of the spa, to like finding it within herself to like run down a pipe.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of them, after the parents, after she gets taken away by Haku, right? Is his name?
Yes.
And he's like, don't breathe. She can't even like hold it together crossing the bridge. You know, you're like,
yes, a friendly frog creeps her out.
Yeah, like you're just walking and a fucking frog's like, what's up, Haku? And she's like, oh, fuck. That's her like reaction out of it. And then she's like ready to take on anyone by the end of this movie to get what she needs for everyone that she's made friends with and her parents.
It's not confrontational. It's just like, hello, new friend.
Yep.
How are you? How's your day going? She's just not enjoying it.
Hello, new friend. Hey, I'm about to take this dude to meet your sister. Like, we're going to go see your sister. Like, let's do this. I'm about to just float on this river, get on this train by myself with no face and this rat and bird, that the rat is the baby or whatever.
Sure, you know? Yeah.
But you're like, I'm about to get on a train and head out to who the hell knows where. Like, she just does what needs to be done by the end and is ready to do it.
Yeah. You can read all kinds of things on top of that arc. But that arc, as well as it's executed, is enough for this movie to be great. Last thing, I don't know how many times you've seen this movie, probably more than once, but like on this latest go around, which of the infinite number of just like tiny background stuff or just little weird touches that no one would think of except for Miyazaki and Ghibli animators did like popped for you this time?
Just when she's originally going up, to meet Yubaba. Okay, see, I'm like stroking over here. When she's going up to meet Yubaba, and you just see everything in the background. I don't remember specific. I can't say like specifically, but just as they're just moving, you get to like the radish dude, and he's not the only one that's like in the fucking that, you know, that like scene, and just all of the different spirits that they had in the background of it. I thought it was great. There wasn't anyone specifically that I, you know, leapt out to me, I would say.
Yeah. I love the little noises that No Face makes. Like before his mouth comes out and he starts stuffing himself. Just the little like sighs that he makes, or grunts, or whatever they are, these high-pitched grunts. They're so weird, and not what you would expect to come out of this thing. It never gets old. I love that. I love that shit. Spirited Away. Masterpiece.
Great movie. I also want to say that I just love the radish spirit. Dude's sure. Just big chilling.
His big old teeth.
Yeah, he's just like just constantly walking up in their space. Love it.
There's a shot of him celebrating later on that is really funny. I think when she frees like the stink spirit.
Yeah, he's like jumping up and down a little bit.
Oh, it's so funny. A recognizable Japanese man that might be walking around a Japanese spa with his dick theoretically out, but it's just like covered under various folds and that kind of thing. Our last movie is Kiki's Delivery Service. Another Ghibli movie that I had not seen before. that I would kind of lump in the same spot as Porco Rosso in the sense that I just didn't have much sense of what this movie was about. I might have even had less sense of what it was about than Porco. Just because that line, better to be a pig than a fascist, has come up more and more in recent years. But I was very pleasantly surprised by Kiki's delivery service. It grabbed me within the first few minutes in the way that good coming-of-age movies often do. It just very quickly implies this is going to be bittersweet. It's going to be a little wistful in the scenes with Kiki, this young witch who is going out on like a rite of passage, spirit journey off to a new city away from her parents. She's like 12 or she's 13 and she's got to establish herself using her unique witch powers in some city in this like pseudo Scandinavian environment that they're in. And there's like scenes of her dad struggling to pick her up in the way that he would have like 5 or 6 years ago. The neighbor is talking in like broad terms about how everything changes, and you're just immediately set up for what kind of movie this is going to be. And then that is the movie that is delivered to you. This very, I thought, perceptive movie about adolescence that isn't about like Kiki wanting to see that dick necessarily. She's not super horny or like concerned about physical changes. It's adolescence as an emotional, like progressive half step between childhood neediness and adult independence. And surprise, surprise, Miyazaki has his arms completely wrapped around this period of life that he experienced decades previously. JR, what did you think about Kiki's delivery service?
I think Kiki's delivery service is great. She's going through, you know, going through life as a 13-year-old that just got sent out onto the world to be a witch who doesn't have any, like, real witch things that you typically think of outside of riding the broom, right? As she said herself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as she's riding out, she meets the one that's like, I can tell fortunes or whatever the other witch said. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I wonder what Kiki's are. And then she's just like, I can only fly. And you're like, oh, shit, what is she about to do? Runs into these wonderful people and then just like finds out that that's what she wants to do, is just kind of make people happy by delivering their shit, right? And make these people that are letting her live with them also happy with it. And she just, you know, has the boy, and, you know, just has all the stuff where she's like, can I even wear this to this guy's party that she doesn't end up even making it to and whatever, and is helping out like a grandparent, you know, helps out that grandma.
Yeah.
And then goes to deliver it and just drops it off. And the girl is like, I fucking can't stand this food that she gives us. And you're stuck there thinking about it from Kiki's point of view, where she's like, damn, yo, your grandma just like, we just took all this time to make this shit for you. You're not even appreciative. I just got kicked out of the house, bro. Like, I'm 13. I ain't even got a home.
That's a different kind of movie where she's like forced to go on this.
I know.
On this new, like that is an important distinction. Like, the movie is not about her being cast out by her family. Like, she gleefully goes.
Yeah.
She's excited to do this.
Yes.
She's more excited than her parents.
I just want to, I'm just saying, like, you're thinking, you know, when I watched that, I did have that thought where it was like, this woman's grandma's like delivering food to her and shit, and like a lot of these people aren't even excited about the gifts they're getting from people that Kiki's delivering. But
yeah,
then,
like, people generally are not impressed with her at all.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that she is flying on a broom above this city like through traffic and all that, and they're just like, okay.
Yeah, like the cop that was just like, oh, where are your parents? Yeah.
People are not impressed, which like fits with the theme of the movie of just like losing joy over the course of seeing a thing, witnessing a thing, doing a thing, and that very much being a part of life that a person has to reckon with. Not good or bad, just true, that you get acclimated to stuff, and what used to thrill you doesn't anymore. Like, like all of the boys' friends probably used to also be super into blimps, and the boy has retained that interest, and his friends are have moved on to other stuff. Yeah, and like you mentioned, like the pie delivery, another delightfully low stakes movie where this where Kiki's delivery service, like what's at risk is not, am I going to get to go back home to my family? It's, am I going to be able to deliver this gross fish pie?
Yeah.
Or it gets cold in the rain.
Is this cat toy? Am I going to get this cat toy sewn back up after I find it? Like, yeah. What's up with this?
And everything's, yeah.
She's not delivering hearts.
And everything is, she completes these tasks with some amount of comic difficulty and not real difficulty in the end, and just moves on to the next one. and it's delightful. It's a lot of fun. Miyazaki gave an interview to Roger Ebert around this time, and in 1988 when he released this movie. And he talked about the concept of ma, which is a Japanese thing that Miyazaki defined as the space between claps. And you hear that and you immediately can picture like
the space between moments. Claps.
The at space between claps.
C-L-A-P-S?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you said collapse.
Okay.
Space, yeah. And I was like, collapse and what? I was waiting for the, sorry, the space between claps. Okay.
So with that definition, you can immediately think of like 10 instances, if not more, in various Miyazaki movies where he's putting ma into it. And the ma here, like with Chihiro watching her dad walk in front of her, like my foundational shot in Kiki's Delivery Service, is her in the shop, in the bakery, sitting in this like magic hour storefront, bored as shit, waiting for something to happen. And the movie returns to it a couple times. It's cinematic as hell, like perfect, all the mise-en-scene and all that shit. And that's what the movie is, that in that one shot. It's this girl who is started the movie like full of excitement, anxious for what the next thing is going to be, and the next thing is waiting for a customer to come into the shop. And that's very much what life is. And if the movie is about an adolescent like figuring out what the next phase of her life is going to be, like, well, you know, it's going to be this. It's going to be this.
Yeah.
And it happens to be taking place in this beautiful bakery, in this beautiful like seaside city. But you're going to get used to it. It's not going to, you can only look at the waves so many times, look at your view so many times, smell the bread so many times. Shit's going to get boring. And you've got to find a way to make it interesting, or find a way to work with, to deal with your boredom, or, you know, jump off your broom from 30,000 feet. those are your options pretty much.
Jesus.
I mean, that love, if you've ever, there's a documentary about Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki and Takahata and the time that they were working on what in that period was going to be both of their last movies, Tale of Princess Kaguya for Takahata and The Wind Rises for Miyazaki. It was Takahata's last movie because he died a couple years later. And then Miyazaki stayed retired for a long time before coming back to briefly work on Urik and the Witch, and then wash his hands of it when he saw where that was going, and then to make The Boy and the Heron, which is coming out later this year. that documentary from 2013, 2014 was called The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness. And he's given a lot of interviews over the decades that he's been in the public eye. And he's done a lot of documentaries. But like this documentary is the only one that I've seen of that kind of thing. He is a depressed man, full stop. He has a very dark view of humanity, of the world, of his work and its value. It is wild to hear him talk.
I
compared to the movies that he makes.
I haven't watched any of the documentaries, but all the time, like, and I never know if they're like not his actual words, but I always see like four stills from like him talking, and you know, it'll be like the four stills, and it'll be like him saying stuff like, is life even worth it, or you know, or some shit like that. And I'm always like, is this dude actually saying this? Like, yeah, I don't actually, so it sounds like it's real.
Someone with his resume, his accomplishments, is pretty sure that he did everything wrong, that his work is not going to last, and that it was all for nothing. He's not a good dad, based on what you read about his son, who he stuck with Earwig and the Witch after he saw that it was not going to go well. And sure enough, it is far and away the worst reviewed movie that Ghibli has ever put out. And I will never watch it because it's so outside of their tradition that I just can't imagine. I cannot imagine spending time watching that movie. And yeah, he stuck that with his son, let his son take the heat for it, which kind of guaranteed that his son would not take over the studio when Miyazaki finally dies. So that's probably been his whole life. And he's probably spent a lot of his life when he had smaller kids, like hunched over an easel drawing like animation cells. So he's a complicated man. And of his movies, I think he's letting that part of him get into, of all movies that he's made, this movie, Kiki's Delivery Service. It's quite clearly coming from a really dark place in Miyazaki's head. Still beautiful in a lot of ways, still ultimately ends on a happy ending. But what separates this movie from the A- that I gave it and the A that it was really getting close to over the course of the movie is, like, the movie takes a break for Kiki to, like, hang out in the forest with a young painter. And this is in a period where her cat, who we'll return to shortly, has stopped talking to her. She broke her broom. She can't fly anymore. Well, she lost her ability to fly, and then she broke her broom. So, low point of the movie, all is lost moment. And the painter, like, takes her into the woods and tells her that the painter was spending her whole life up to this point recreating stuff that she had seen. And she only felt most comfortable in her art when she started painting stuff that only she could make. And that is an incredible idea to put into a movie that you could take the whole family to. But stop me if I'm wrong here. I don't think the movie connects Kiki's resurgence of her powers with that speech. And I think that's the difference between an A- and an A.
I agree with you. Okay. It seems like she just gets her powers back.
Yeah, she gets her powers back in a way that is typical, I think, for a movie like this, where a moment of great need arises, where the boy is, like, dangling from a blimp, and then she's able, she, like, grabs a broom and is able to fly again when she most needs.
I will say I had
him, and it's extremely cathartic. It's a great rescue. The Matrix Resurrections like stole its climatic shot from this movie. I couldn't believe it. And end of movie, clap, clap, clap. But thematically, it just doesn't quite link up. It's great. It's incredible that they included the painter's speech in the movie. But it's just not relevant to that big ending.
I do, when I watched that, last Monday or whatever day it was, I do specifically remember watching it and being like, yeah, she just got her powers back just so she could save this dude. Like, that's the ideal, right? Is like, you get your powers back to save this guy, but it's like, does she get her powers back for herself? And that's where the difference is. It's like, Superman loses his powers and he gets his powers back because Lois Lane is falling out of a building. And that's what happened here versus like a movie you would expect from this. That's not the move you expect from this. You expect her to get her powers back, but no one to know it. And she used them to save his life. But she has been working on herself some way to get those powers back. And it doesn't seem like that's what happened.
Or like that's the moment when she does like develop some kind of unique witch power.
Like
every witch can fly on a broom, but the witch that she runs into on her way to this new city, like you said, can tell fortunes. And you never get a sense really of what Kiki's unique ability is as the movie ends. Right?
She needs to start like levitating shit and then like force catch this dude like fucking Darth Vader or something.
Yeah. All this is to say, like, it's not that the movie as is doesn't work extremely well. Like, that rescue is quite thrilling, and everybody cheers when she catches him, and it's great. It's a great moment. But I'm kind of talking myself down. I'm sticking with the A- because the rest of it is just so strong.
I'm sticking with the A still.
Okay. So you're 3 A's for this.
Yeah, 3 A's.
Great. Okay.
That's why I was like all in on when we've been talking about doing a Miyazaki trio. I've been like, yeah, let's fucking do that because that just guarantees I get to watch like great fucking movies, you know? Like,
yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I'm cool with that. I know, I know they got some like not A's in there, but I knew we weren't going to pick 3 random movies, right?
Mm.
So, yes, 3 A's. 3 A's. The one that's like a possible A minus is Porco Rosso.
Okay.
But probably still an A for me. But that could be one where that was the first time I watched it, right? So like I could rewatch it and then be an A minus. But I've seen these other two multiple times and these are definitely A's for me.
I think the last thing to say about Kiki's is Gigi, her pet cat. The first time I watched this was for this trio of movies. I watched the subbed version. And the actor who is voicing Gigi might be the greatest comedic genius of her time, because the timing on this cat is incredible. And like Phil Hartman voices the dubbed version, the English dubbed version. I'm sure he's fine. But the actor I'm imagining voicing Gigi for the subbed version is like a really pinched, short, like Japanese woman in her 60s. And that's like kind of the perfect voice to come out of this cat. Whereas Phil Hartman's voice, as versatile as he is, it's Phil Hartman, like Troy McClure and the lawyer whose fucking name I don't remember. Jesus, Lionel Hutz, there it is. And Lionel Hutz, they're quite clearly voiced by the same guy. caveman lawyer and some other Phil Hartman SNL character. Same guy. He's not necessarily versatile. You hear Phil Hartman's voice and you think of Phil Hartman. I'm sure he does a fine job in the subbed version or in the dubbed version, but
it was fine. It was the first time I watched it. I watched them all dubbed, and it was the first time I watched them dubbed. I'm a sub guy. I'm all, you know, as I watch, because I watched anime, so I've always been.
Yeah. It depends on how engaged I'm going to be. If I'm not going to be as engaged, then I want to hear the English. But if I'm locked in, I'm going to, then yes, give me the subtitle. Like in a theater, always subbed. Every time. At home, I might feel a little differently. Point being, like, there's just no chance Phil Hartman is up to snuff. I think this is maybe the funniest character that has ever existed in a Ghibli movie.
Okay, I'll have to rewatch this because I don't specifically remember that from the last time. But like Phil Hartman, he does fine, right? And like you're saying, it's like The Rock. You go to The Rock, you go to see a movie with The Rock, and he's the same dude.
Yeah, you get what you can.
The same thing, yeah. And it's the same thing with Phil Hartman. You're getting your Phil Hartman stuff, which is good.
I have read that in the dubbed version or the subbed version, the English version, you get a sense that Gigi's voice is coming back at the very end.
Maybe.
I did read that that was the initial release, and then they like redid it.
Okay. Later.
Like when this movie was first shown in America, you get a sense at the end that Gigi's getting his voice back. But for like the re-release, because they do this shit all the time with Ghibli movies, they cut that out because that is quite obviously the better choice, is to leave him as a cat by the end instead of a talking cat.
Why?
That just totally fit. Why is that better? Because of losing the wonder of childhood as the movie goes on and like setting into like banal adulthood.
Yeah, but she just got her fucking powers back. They obviously don't give a shit about that anymore.
Sure, but it's just like general bittersweetness. That is the decided tone of the movie. Like, yeah, you can fly on your broom. Okay. But you're not going to get everything back. I liked it. I like the way, as much as I missed Gigi, the fact of missing him put me in the same shoes as Kiki, which is, I think, is just generally better for the movie.
Okay. I can see that.
We'll surely return to Ghibli at some point. Like maybe a Takahata trio, Fireflies. Only Yesterday is up there for me. Yeah, as far as like Ghibli top five, it's obviously Spirited Away and Totoro. I need to watch Fireflies again to really get a good grasp of that one.
Only Fireflies is dope.
I mean, obviously an important movie, but within like the pantheon of World War II movies, I would need to place it. I'm sure it's up there.
I was gonna say, you think it's gonna suck or something? But yeah, it's
I don't know. I saw it probably 15 years ago is when I saw that. I've only seen it the one time. It's not a movie that like, boy, I can't wait to see that again.
Yeah, you don't want to watch the tales of people in Japan in 1945 at the like final three months of the war or whatever.
I did recently watch a movie called In This Corner of the World, which is not a Ghibli movie, but it is a movie about like Japan and World War II from a teenager's perspective. And that was quite good. There's lots of these kinds of movies made by Japan and otherwise. There's lots of like living through World War II from like Empire of the Sun type of stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, placing Grave of the Fireflies within that, I don't know, I would need to watch it again to, like, definitively put it on top five Ghibli movie list. But Only Yesterday is definitely on there. Probably Kiki's is too. I have to think about that last one. But that'll do us for this episode of the Mutic Movie Club podcast. Porco didn't work for me, but these two movies are fantastic. And it's the rare trio that gets three consecutive A's from a viewer or from a member. And this is one of those episodes.
This is one.
This is one. Our next trio of movies kind of got a stick thrown in the spokes of our bicycle because of the ongoing intransigence of the AMTPT. I don't know exactly what the acronym for the producers are. Whoever's negotiating against the actors and the writers, they bounced Dune 2 from October to March. And the theme of our next trio is going to be like a fall preview. Movies from directors that are releasing movies in the fall. And Denis Villeneuve is the director of Dune 2, so we were going to watch Arrival. We're still going to watch Arrival as part of our next trio, Producers Be Damned, in this and so many other things. We're also going to watch Marie Antoinette from Sofia Coppola as she has her new movie Priscilla coming out about Priscilla Presley. Very much a counterpoint to Elvis, which came out in 2022. And we're also going to be watching Seven from David Fincher, because David Fincher has his new serial killer movie titled The Killer coming out in, I think, November in that case, maybe October. Very excited to get a new David Fincher movie, especially if Mank didn't really do it for you, as it didn't really do it for me. This preview. Should be Fincher. Sorry?
Preview of the next one. If Marie Antoinette is an A, this will probably be another three A's from JR.
I think that would be shocking. I know people do love Marie Antoinette, and I to give a preview of our eventual discussion and my eventual review of Marie Antoinette, that movie is fatally flawed. It does not justify its premise from me, history leftist. But I do take a lot of pleasure in knowing that everybody on screen is going to get theirs in one way or another as I'm watching this unquestionably beautifully directed movie. But yeah, it stops when it stops before you get to see the fun comeuppance of the scum of France cavorting their palaces. Sorry for the spoiler.
Well, it's good to know I don't need to look forward to that in the movies anymore. So,
yeah, just know that it's going to happen, but it's not. Sofia Coppola, a scion of film royalty, isn't too interested in an extremely wealthy and powerful person getting her comeuppance. But that's our next trio. And in the meantime, you can find reviews of these Ghibli movies and so many others on our website, MuticMovie.club. I also recently posted a review of Bones and All on there, gave that an A-, absolutely loved it. Like us on Facebook at Mutic Movie Club, Twitter at Mutic Movie Club, and Instagram at Mutic Movie Club. Thank you for joining me tonight, JR.
Yeah, no problem.
Have a good night.
You too.